for the very kind introduction. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm delighted to see such a nice turnout on a hot summer evening. Congratulations to all those of you who are in the process of studying Estonia or Latvian or Lithuanian in the Baltic program, and also those who are teaching in the program. I hear things are going quite well. Before I launch in, first of all, if you can't hear me, just wave your hand and I'll try to speak louder. And also, if I start to speak too fast, start waving your hands, because I do have that tendency. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. So as Jennifer suggested, most of my research is really about Russia. I'm not an expert on Estonia or the Baltic countries. So, however, I have been engaged in a research project about which I'm going to talk today, looking in particular about the situation of ethnic Russians in Estonia. And I should also note, is joint work, is collaborative work with Sarah Mendelson, who is a political scientist and who worked while we're doing the project at a think tank in Washington called the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or CSIS. And Sarah is now working for USAID. She was appointed by the Obama administration to a high-level post in that organization. So I'm no longer able to put her name on our joint research products without going through a lot of bureaucratic permissions and so forth. But keep in mind that this is joint work with Sarah Mendelson. So I probably don't need to review this in this crowd, but I will briefly anyway, in case there are some people in the audience who are not familiar with Estonia. So just some facts and figures about modern Estonia. It's a small, ethnically divided, and relatively prosperous, I say relatively prosperous, particularly for a former Soviet republic. So here are just some figures. Its area is only 17,000 or so square miles, which makes it about a quarter, maybe a third, actually the size of the state of Wisconsin. This population is 1.4 million, which again is considerably smaller than the state of Wisconsin. Its ethnic distribution is as follows: 65% ethnic Estonians, 28% ethnic Russians, then a smattering of other Ukrainians, Belarusians, Finns, and then others. Its official language, its only official language, is the Estonian language, which some of you are studying or teaching. And its GDP per capita is $18,700 per person in 2009, and that makes it ranked 62 out of 227 countries. So, relatively prosperous, and certainly not what you would consider a developing country, but it does lag behind sort of the average of the European Union, which is 32,600. It lags behind Finland, which has a lot of ties historically with Estonia. But it is it's slightly behind the Czech Republic, but it does well compared to Hungary, Poland, and it actually has a higher GDP per capita than Russia. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of background on just what Estonia is. All right, here is again, probably this is all old hat for most of the audience, but just in case, you see it's the northernmost of the three Baltic states. This gives you a sense of just how tiny Estonia is relative to its very large eastern neighbor, Russia, and the tensions and conflicts between Estonia and Russia are sort of the backdrop of what I'll be discussing today. So it's I think, useful to really get a visual representation of the difference in size. Here's the capital of Tallinn. For those of you who haven't been there, very charming place. I absolutely adore the city. All right, so I'll show you a few more pictures later. So in order to understand the situation of ethnic Russians today, it's really important to go back and review Estonia's history, and with particular emphasis on the history of the 20th century, because the longstanding conflicts between Estonia and Russia are very much alive today and drive a lot of the tensions between the ethnic Russian and the ethnic Estonian populations in Estonia. So for centuries, the territory of Estonia was ruled by different foreign powers: Danes, Swedes, Germans, and Russians. Estonia did have independence in 1918 in the aftermath of World War I, but it was a relatively brief independence because as part of the Molotov-von Ribbentrop Pact in August of 1939, the Baltic countries were given, so to speak, by an agreement between Hitler and Stalin to the Soviet Union. So the Soviets actually invaded Estonia in June 1940, and mass executions and deportations of Estonia's population followed shortly thereafter. In June 1941, the Nazis then attacked the Soviet Union. They quickly overran the Baltic states, and by most accounts, they were initially greeted as liberators because the Baltic peoples were very unhappy about being under Soviet rule. However, that quickly turned to disappointment when the harsh and brutal nature of the Nazis' policies came to light, which didn't take long. Now, here's another picture. I think this is an interesting picture. This is actually Soviet tank commander fraternizing with German troops near the demarcation line in Poland. So, this is live testimony or evidence of the agreement between the Nazis and the Soviets prior to the invasion of the Soviet Union by Hitler. Okay, after the Soviet army retook Estonia, another round of, perhaps even harsher round of executions and deportations of the local population followed. And I think, I've seen different figures thrown around, but just to give you a sense of the scale, I think, it's sort of a summary of those figures. I think this pretty much captures the scale anyway. It's estimated that between 1940 and 1953, 10% of Estonia's population was killed or deported to Siberia by Soviet authorities. And it's also worth noting that the elite population was especially targeted, those with higher education, property owners, those who were deemed class enemies according to the Soviet ideology. So then ensued the period of Soviet rule, which lasted until 1991. And the Soviets imposed their economic and political system on Estonia as well as the other Baltic countries. Also of note, particularly during the 1970s, but even before then and then continuing afterwards, there was a policy of encouraging Russian ethnics to migrate to the Baltic countries, to Estonia in particular, to work in industry there. There was a labor shortage. It was a particularly industrialized part of the Soviet Union, the Baltic states. And the Soviet regime had a clear policy of providing incentives and encouraging Russians to move from the Russian RSFSR to Estonia. And that has consequences for the situation today, because that migration is what produced that 28% of the population in Estonia who are ethnic Russians today. Of course, in the late 1980s, Mikhail Gorbachev was the premier of Russia, and he initiated a policy of liberalization and glasnost. And Estonia, along with the other two Baltic countries, was particularly active in terms of the level of civic activism, which arose rapidly in response to the political opening created by Gorbachev. And there are several well-known examples of the Baltic states demanding autonomy, demanding their freedom. There was what was called the Singing Revolution, which probably a lot of you know something about. More than me, but from what I understand, it involved citizens getting together and singing folk songs, singing traditional songs as a way of asserting their desire for freedom and autonomy. And then they formed a human chain which ran through all three Baltic countries in 1989. There's a photo of that here. So again, a very peaceful, very sort of innovative forms of protest the Baltics engaged in. So the Soviet Union fell apart. Gorbachev, failed to keep the Union together. The Baltic countries were actually the first to leave. What happened in Estonia after the Soviet period, since 1991? Well, Estonia established a parliamentary democracy as a form of government. It quickly oriented its policies towards the West, particularly towards the Nordic countries. It joined NATO and it joined the European Union in the early 2000s. It generally has prospered economically, as we've seen. So one of the major issues facing the country has been that of the citizenship status of Russian immigrants. And the crux of the matter is whether or not people who came to the country in the guise of occupiers, as part of an occupying power, and their offspring should be granted automatically citizenship status? And according to international law, the answer is no. That according to international law, if a country is deemed to be an occupying force, and that is the official legal status of the Soviet presence in Estonia, then the country is not obliged to give give individuals who came to the country under the guise of that occupation citizenship. So that was the policy that the Estonian government adapted. However, they did have a problem in that a huge proportion of their population were Russians or other Russian speakers, so Ukrainians, others who were ethnically not part of the Estonian nation, and who either a large part of these people were actually born in Estonia. It was their parents who actually came as part of the migration, but their status was also up in the air. So the Estonian government did institute a naturalization process whereby Russian speakers could apply to become citizens, and they had to pass tests. They had to show that they could speak the Estonian language. And this latter requirement was actually quite onerous for many Russians because they had never learned Estonian. They lived in their own communities, often in factory barracks or in segregated communities in large cities mainly, or in the northeastern regions near Narva. And so they didn't speak Estonian. It's a difficult language to learn, and so I can say, having never, just hearing it and having them try to teach me how to say hello and goodbye, and you know, where's the bar? I had trouble even managing that in my trips to Tallinn. Okay, so there have been assimilation programs in the Estonian government at different points in time. So when they joined the EU was quite concerned about this issue of citizenship and. Because the EU has its own standards, its own policies, and so they encouraged the government. The government did invest money in trying to give Russians who were residing in Estonia the instruction that they needed in order to pass a citizenship test. And indeed, most Russians living in Estonia have become citizens. All right, and I think the best estimate I've seen suggests that it's really only about 1/3 of the Russian-speaking population who are not citizens, and they're non-citizens. They're officially citizens of no country. These aren't citizens of Russia because they either immigrated, you know, when there was no Russia as such, there was only the Soviet Union, and they have to apply for Russian citizenship if they want, or they were actually born in Estonia and lived their own whole lives there, but they're given the status of resident aliens, basically, and they're given gray passports as opposed to the blue EU passports that Estonian citizens have. There have been reports of discrimination against Russian speakers. There are official language policies which say that to hold certain types of jobs, it's imperative that one speak Estonian language. And there's also reports of informal discrimination. Moreover, there's growing tensions between Estonia and Russia. And a lot of that has to do with the Russian government's claims that the rights of Russian speakers in Estonia have been violated by the citizenship laws. So these tensions came to a head in the so-called Bronze Night incident, which took place in April 2007. And what that involved is the removal of a Soviet war memorial from a central location in Tallinn to an area in the outskirts, a military cemetery. And basically there was some discussion of this, but this monument or this memorial to the Soviet sacrifices in World War II, it had become a sort of symbolic meeting point where Russian nationalists of various stripes had gathered, and of course it would figure symbolically in the celebration of Victory Day by the Russian population in May. But the Estonian government authorities were a little concerned that it was becoming sort of a focal point of protests and striped nationalism on the part of the Russian population, and they decided to move it, and they just did it overnight. Well, not overnight, they sort of set up overnight a barricade around it and then picked it up and moved it. And the Russians, when they found out about this, they started gathering there and protesting, and the protest eventually became violent. The police came in and beat up the protesters with batons, and then the protesters marauded and trashed liquor stores and so forth. And so this caught a lot of press and caused an international outcry. The Russian government was very angry. There were civic groups in Russia, such as the infamous Nashi organization, which was involved in harassing Estonian diplomats. I mean, they surrounded the Estonian ambassador's car and were picking it up off the ground and making all kinds of threatening gestures and throwing rocks at the embassy and this kind of thing. There was an apparent cyber war conducted against the Estonian government, and it's still not clear today who was responsible. The Russian government denies it was responsible, although the one of Putin's close advisor, Surkov, has claimed in interviews it was his idea, that it wasn't the government that did it, but he and his friends orchestrated the whole thing. But basically, it shut down the Estonian government's computer system, and Estonia is remarkably high tech. In turn, you can pay for your parking meter for your cell phone in Tallinn. I don't think you can do that in Madison or even New York, for that matter. It probably will be a long time before you can. So the denial of service attack was quite substantial. And then there was a lot of aggressive statements, threats, Russian politicians making speeches, grandstanding, talking about how with the continuing exploitation of Russian citizens in Estonia, that has to stop, and that we're going to pass legislation, and you better watch out, or we're going to go and show you just how small, tiny, insignificant a country you are, and we have a great people, a great army, and we're not going to let you get away with this. So there was a lot of anger on both sides, and it continues today. So, I mean, I just happened upon, last September, there was a broadcast on the Russian international news station, Russia Today, which is sort of let's face it, it's kind of a propaganda station for the Russian government. And it referred to the criminal discrimination against Russians by Estonia's apartheid regime. I mean, this was like a headline on there. It's like criminal discrimination continues against Russia by Estonia's apartheid regime. So very virulent type of language to describe the situation. All right, so here are just some photos just to give you a sense. Here's that monument in its original location in downtown Tallinn. And you see people would come in and lay flowers, and then it was moved out to the cemetery. It's not that far out of town. I went there with my colleague, and we visited this, and in some ways this is actually a very peaceful and appropriate place for a military monument, it seems to me, but that's just my opinion. So here you see what they put this tent up around the monument, and this just went up overnight, and people started to gather, and they had the troops there, and just a few more photos. So things did get ugly. They were firing off tear gas and burning, sending bonfires and so forth, and looks like that's a store of some kind or kiosk broken into. Okay, so that just gives you the background that there's a lot of tension surrounding the situation of ethnic Russians. The question arises, who do they belong to? Are they really part of Estonian society, or are they cast out? Are they, do they feel like they're isolated? How similar, how different are Russian ethnics compared to their Estonian ethnic counterparts? And with all this political footballery surrounding them, is it the case that they're oriented towards Russia? Do the Estonian Russians themselves see Russia as a potential savior or as a force that will help them in their situation? Well, to address questions like this, and also, in fact, part of our motive was to address efforts that we detected on the part of the Russian government to engage in what's come to be known as a soft power strategy. That the idea being that the Russian government, like other governments, including the United States, in order to project its power throughout the world, can't in the modern age rely solely on military force and economic might. It also has to rely on information and propaganda and ideas. And so you see a lot of this in statements that Russian government officials have made about the United States and its violations of human rights in Guantanamo and its aggression towards Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. Well, part of the same argument has to do with the situation of Russian ethnics in Estonia. And the Russian government has used the language of rights, the language of protecting civil liberties, the language of protecting people from discrimination in order to make the case for Estonia not being faithful, Estonia and by implication other members of the EU, not being really true to their stated ideals of democracy and representative government and civil freedoms. So You can think of Estonia, the situation of Estonian Russians, as being interesting from the perspective of how effective is Russia's soft power strategy. So what we did is we first conducted focus groups with Russian speakers. It would have been nice if we could have conducted focus groups with Estonian speakers as well, but since neither Sarah nor I speak Estonian, that wouldn't have been possible. You might think we only got one side of the story here, and that probably is true with respect to the focus groups, but with respect to the survey we did to follow up, we did include Estonians as well as Russians. So we were focused on the views of Russian speakers, so we conducted three focus groups in Tallinn and one in Narva, and then we conducted a larger survey of, do I have the sample sizes? Here are the sample sizes here. This was a very difficult, I've done a lot of surveys. This is probably the hardest one I've ever done because we actually did the survey simultaneously in Russia. We also did the survey at the same time in Estonia and also in Russia. So we have really three groups. We have Russian citizens and living in Russia. We have Estonian ethnics living in Estonia. And then we had Estonian Russians living in Estonia. And we asked them pretty much the same questions. Today, I'm mostly going to focus on the Estonian results, although I'll bring in Russia results in a few places. So we had to write the survey for two different national contexts, and then in Estonia we had to write it in two languages for two different ethnic groups, one of which we didn't speak. So we did do pre-testing of the survey in all the settings and all the ethnic groups. The survey in Estonia was conducted by an Estonian survey polling organization, SAR Poll. It took place in December and the start of January, so very recently, and this is really very preliminary results I'll be showing you today. We had a very good response rate, and our sample consisted of roughly half and half Estonians and ethnic Russians. And among the ethnic Russians, we had 667 who were Estonian citizens, and then 338 who were non-citizens. And it was very difficult to generate that many non-citizens in this particular sample, because what I failed to mention so far is that we're focused on young people. And that's what our studies focus on. That's who we conducted the focus groups with. And part of the motivation for that is that we've been looking for a number of years at the political views of young people in Russia. And so it was sort of natural to focus on one slice of the population. And young people, of course, their political views are interesting from a number of perspectives. But particularly among this age group, there are relatively few, probably only about 10% or even fewer, who are not citizens. And so we really had to push the survey company hard to try to get them to find enough non-citizens, because we suspected, and it turns out to be indeed the case, that there's actually substantial differences within the Russian ethnic community between those who have acquired Estonian citizenship and those who have not. And doesn't pertain to all variables, but it's not as extreme as you might think, but there does tend to be some difference. All right, so let me talk about the findings then. So, some of the main things we found from the focus groups, and I'll put up some quotes from the groups to illustrate these findings. We found that there is a strong sense of alienation and exclusion on the part of the ethnic Russians, that although at the same time, we also sense undercurrents of a desire for integration and ambivalence about their situation. So, it's not the case that there's a uniform picture here, that many did express that they feel rejected by Estonian society and they're told to go home, but they also felt a kind of longing to be part of Estonian society. We did not find any evidence in the focus groups that the Russian speakers in Estonia see Russia as an answer to their problems. And although they think Putin is great and so forth, they don't really think that Russia is going to come to their aid, and they don't really have much interest in moving to Russia, a finding that we found holds up in the survey. And then we found very sharp reactions to the Broad's Night incident, that this was a very emotional event for the Russians, and they really viewed it as a slap in their face on the part of the Estonian authorities and Estonian society. And let me point out that I'm not here to say that the Russians are right or wrong to feel this way or to take sides, and this is a very thorny issue, and that it's one of these, I think, intractable kinds of dilemmas, because I think both sides in this debate have plenty of good arguments to make and plenty of reasons for feeling attacked and oppressed by the other side. And so I should preface my comments by saying, you know, I'm not a sympathizer with the ethnic Russians. I'm not a sympathizer with the Estonian ethnics either. My job is just to try to analyze the situation and report what the data have to say. So, all right, well, these are what the Russians said, and these are some signs of just how excluded they feel. So one person said to the group, you know, the Estonians are like a Ku Klux Klan without clubs. They think to themselves, and sometimes they say aloud, get out of here, and that's it. And that is their main wish. And so, you know, a number of Russians in the groups report incidents where, you know, they had some kind of petty altercation with a stranger, you know, an old woman who didn't like them walking the dog. She would say, go back to Russia where you came from. That's where you belong. And this kind of, you know, occasional anecdotes of encounters where, you know, they felt like they were unwelcome. Another said, I'm mainly concerned with the citizenship issue. Why do we have gray passports? So this is a group consisting of people who are not citizens. We were born here and we don't have Estonian passports. I was born here, I pay taxes, and I am no one here. So this is a logic according to which, you know, they don't understand why, if they've been born in Estonia and lived their whole lives there, why shouldn't they just be given citizenship? Yes, the standard term for us is that we are non-Estonians, and I do not want to be a non-Estonian. Why am I a non-Estonian? Okay, just incomprehension. I love Tallinn, I just adore it. I love the little streets, the history, the local culture, but somehow they won't let us love it. They won't allow us to. So again, you have people who've lived their whole lives in the country, and they sense that they're not welcome, that they're not really treated as being part of the society, and they are perplexed by this and feel unhappy about it. But here are some more signs of more ambivalence. So we did hear a number of Russians in the focus group say, well, hey, you know, we can learn Estonian, get citizenship, and I'm tired of hearing these people complain about how they're discriminated against when all they have to do is learn Estonian and become citizens. So here's an example of that. I've heard so many times, oh, it's so tough for us, we can't find work. I have a girlfriend who's always worked in Tartu as an executive, but since she's been here in Tallinn, she's not found work and she's gone to work in a shop. I tell her that she needs to go learn Estonian so that she can at least go for an interview. I tell her to take a course or find a tutor. I've been telling her this for a year. Has she done anything? Nothing. For a year, she has just lamented about how hard it is for her and how I should help her find a job. But how can I help her if she doesn't speak Estonian, only Russian? All right, so this is a Russian woman who's speaking, who's saying, look, you know, I learned Estonian. You can learn Estonian. Stop whining about how, you know, poor you, go out and learn Estonian. So that is part of, you know, more of an assimilationist logic, and it certainly was present in the group. Okay, another said, emotionally then, I think my homeland is Russia after all, but to really think that I would move to Russia today, no. There are too many Russians there for me to move there. So this is a person who, and this came up, you know, we asked them, well, would you like to move to Russia? And they said, well, I mean, by and large, they said, no, not really. When we go there, we don't feel comfortable. They treat us like we're foreigners, like we're weird. They don't understand us. And their lifestyle is very different. You know, they're rude. They're always moving so fast. And all they care about is money. I mean, these kinds of things you hear them say about the Russians. These are Russians speaking, again, ethnic Russians. I adore Russian culture, but I understand that I will never live there. I'm a Western type of person, not Eastern. And I would not want to raise my children there. But we can't call Estonia our motherland in all senses of it, because people are stubbornly pushing us away. So again, this East-West dichotomy is clearly embraced and adapted by this speaker, and they, you know, view Estonia as part of the West, and they see the fact they've grown up in the West, they see themselves as being part of a different cultural tradition than the East, which they associate with Russia. All right, but again, they feel like, you know, their instinct is to feel like they belong to the West, but they feel pushed away by that very same West. So they're in an ambivalent or ambiguous situation, a kind of limbo. The Bronze Knight reactions were really pretty uniform in the focus group. So we had about 18 people, I think, overall in our four groups, and or 20. They really, you know, the emotional tone of the conversations always reached a peak when we raised the Bronze Knight, and these are just a few examples of how strongly people felt. They said that the authorities, they spit on my soul personally. It was a provocation. You know, one participant's grandfather fought in the war, so they felt particularly insulted. Here's actually, I think, a somewhat more nuanced view, however, expressed by one of the ethnic Russians who was a citizen. You understand from the point of view of the Estonians, indeed, it was an occupation. So this person is acknowledging that the Estonians have a different understanding of the Second World War and the Soviet liberation, which the Russians tend to call it. But from the Russian point of view, it was something different. I'm not going to get into the history and politics. The point is that for the Estonians, the monument is a sign of Soviet authority, a symbol that the Estonians were deprived of, roughly speaking, the right to free speech and many other things. And that's during the Soviet regime. For the Russians, it is something entirely different. Those are our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers. They battled against fascism. For us, it's a little different. One thing, though, is the Estonian government behaved indelicately, and that it was possible, of course, to find the relatives of those people who were buried in the tombs or ask permission to rebury them. I mean, there's no need to be so harsh. So the latter is a reference to the fact that there were some remains of World War II soldiers in the memorial. And interestingly enough, a number of the participants in the focus group dwelled on that particular aspect. They thought, well, it wasn't appropriate for them to just dig up these remains without having a military ceremony and a recognition. So this is sort of a compromised position. I mean, many of the Russian participants in the focus groups were just angry, outraged. Some of them were more nuanced. They said, well, we can sort of understand why the Estonians would want to remove this statue, but they went about it in a very brusque and disrespectful manner, that the way they went about it could have been better. All right, so those are some of the, just give you a flavor of some of the themes that came out in the focus groups. Now I want to talk about the survey. So these are the topics I'm going to cover, and I'll show you some of the data. We have a lot of different questions about a range of topics, so I'm only going to be able to scratch the surface, but I want to give you a flavor. So I'll show you some of the basic demographic differences among the three groups within Estonians. So we have Estonians, we have ethnic Russians who are citizens, and ethnic Russians who are non-citizens. Then I'll show you some measures about the degree to which the Estonian and Russian populations intermingle and have contact with one another. We have some measures that sort of get at questions of national identity, perhaps not perfectly, but it's hard to get at these types of questions cleanly with a survey. And then I'll talk about citizenship issues, views on historical issues, and then the Bronze Ninth Incident. So here are some basic demographics, and most of what I have to show you will be in the form of charts and bars, so here's one of the few tables with numbers. A few interesting things. So one point immediately stands out. Remember, these are 16 to 29-year-olds. So even among the Russians, the vast, vast majority were actually born in Estonia. So in this age cohort, 16 to 29-year-olds, there's only about less than 4% of Russian speakers who were not actually born in Estonia, and that's not surprising, even fewer among the Estonians. University education. Well, interestingly enough, the Russians who are citizens, they have the same or even a higher level of university education than the Estonians do. But it's the Russians who are not citizens who lag behind in this particular measure. In terms of the gender breakdown, now I don't know if this is actually a valid statistics or if this reflects the fact that it was hard for us to find women who would agree to be interviewed. I have no way of answering that, but it is interesting that there are more males among the non-citizen Russians than among the citizens. This is not surprising at all for those who know Estonia, and that in the rural areas, Russians are very few and far between the rural areas of Estonia, that Estonians are far more likely to live in the rural populations. Russians are really concentrated in a few major urban areas. We don't have any difference in the mean ages in the sample, and those are the sample size. So those are some broad demographic characteristics. Here are some more data that deal more with socioeconomic issues directly. So among the Russian who are citizens, 25%, and this is according to their own assessment, say that they can speak Estonian fluently, and another 40% say they can speak it well. Now, we have no way of testing whether or not, these aren't sort of official OPI categorizations, but this is according to self-report. But still, that's, one in four is not a bad number. And it's not surprisingly substantially lower among the non-citizens. In terms of Estonians, very few of them speak Russian fluently in this age group. And, that in many ways is not surprising. Now, what about, so they're all about equally likely to be working. So in this age group, keep in mind that some people are still in education, some people are, they're at home with children, or they're, what else could they be doing? They're not working, they're not in education. They're probably not likely to be on pensions yet, although some of them may be on medical dispensations. But in terms of the unemployment rates, these are unemployed looking for work. Again, it's those who are not citizens that have a high, substantially elevated unemployment. The Russians who have a citizenship, they're not that different in terms of their unemployment rate. And look at the income ratio. So these are the percentage of the sample who fall in the top earnings quintile according to their self-reported earnings. Estonians are substantially more likely to be in that quintile than either the citizens or non-citizens among the Russians, but there's a significant difference there as well. Interestingly enough, here is in the bottom earnings quintile, and Estonians are more likely than Russians, whether or not they have citizenship, to be in the bottom earnings quintile as well. I think, and I haven't checked this, but I think that has to do with this, that Estonians predominate in the rural population, earnings are always lower in rural areas everywhere, and particularly so in a place like Estonia. So I would imagine when I get around to running some regressions and controlling for these variables that this difference is really going to be driven by that particular factor. So summarizing this, you get the sense that it's really the gray passport holders who stand out as being less economically advantaged, less educated, lower income, more unemployed, that there are some small differences between the Russian citizens and the Estonian ethnics, but they're muted compared to the gap between the non-citizen Russians and the Estonians. Okay. All right, so now I'm going to show you some figures about interaction and integration. And basically, we asked two questions to get right at this. We asked, what's the relative proportion of Estonians and the relative proportion of Russians among your friends? Are your friends basically all Estonians? Are they mainly Estonians with a few Russians? Are they about 50-50? Are they mainly Russians with a few Estonians, or are they all Russians? And then we asked the same thing about your coworkers at work, what's sort of the breakdown? And what we find is clear evidence of segregated communities, both in terms of friendship and in terms of the workplaces. And there's really only small variation on this particular variable among the Russians by citizenship. So right here, now I've got the Russians with blue passports, so those are the citizens in blue. Those with gray passports in gray, imagine that. And the Estonians I have in red here. So these are, the bars represent the proportion of respondents who fall in each category. So among Estonians, 41% say all their friends are Estonians, and another 53% say mainly Estonians, but some Russians. So 94% mainly Estonians or all Estonians. Whereas for Russians, not surprisingly, but still worth noting the extent of these differences, it's the opposite. So particularly among those with gray passports, right, 48% have no Estonian friends at all versus 33% of the blue passports. So there is some difference. Maybe I was a little bit, there is some difference by passport, but the larger pattern is still quite the same. In terms of Russians and Estonians equally, interestingly enough, those most likely to have equal amounts of Russian and Estonian friends are, again, the Russians with citizenship. All right. So one of the broad themes that comes out of this is that there really is a pronounced difference between the Russians who have citizenship and those who do not in terms of their degree of assimilation and integration. And really, Estonians are very unlikely to have equal proportions of friends. In terms of coworkers, similar pattern. Okay, so the scale is different here, so you can't really compare the height of the bars across these graphs. But again, Estonians, 82%, associate almost at work or work in places with mainly Estonians or entirely Estonians. With Russians, you know, you do see a citizenship difference there, you know, although the pattern is the same. In fact, I probably should go back and change that slide because, you know, looking at this now, I think the citizenship differences are quite striking, even though the overall pattern is the same. All right, so, you know, there's not a lot of intermingling either at the workplace or among social networks. All right, national identity. Now, this is a hard question to get at with surveys. You can ask people, what's your national identity? And that's not, you know, that's kind of a silly question. So what we did say, we did take the following approach, and you can, you know, you're certainly free to criticize it or tell me of a better way we could have gone about this. But this is what we came up with. And we sort of said, we told the survey respondents in the prompt, or the interviewer read them the following statement. People sense different degrees of connection with the places they live or have lived, different senses of their personal homeland or their personal fatherland. Please tell me which of the following places you have the strongest connection to. We showed them a list of places, including their locality where they currently live, the place, their locality where they were born, if it's not where they currently live, and then, you know, Estonia, Russia, the Soviet Union, Europe, Eurasia, all these grand types of places. And then, so first we asked them, what do you feel the strongest sense of connection to, you personally? And then we said, okay, for the other ones on the list, tell us, do you have a strong connection or weak connection or no connection to them? And we found that for all the groups, the strongest connection is to the locality where they're currently living. So they don't necessarily feel the strongest connection to Estonia, but they do to Tallinn or to Narva or to Tartu or to whatever their village they're living in. And this holds, as we'll see, for all the group, or for both the Russians and the Estonians. We did find that, interestingly enough, Estonian Russians are more likely to identify strongly with Estonia than the Estonians are. And we didn't sense that there's much of a connection to Russia among the Russian Estonians. So let's look at these breakdown. All right, so this is, which of the following do you feel the strongest connection to? And present locality for all, and here, okay, so here actually, and the RSFSR sample too. So these are 16 to 29 year olds surveyed in Russia in October. We got that one going a little bit faster than the Estonia one because we didn't have to deal with all the translation issues. And so there, in both countries and all other groups, that's the predominant response. All right, so about 50% or more in each country identify primarily with their locality. So, you know, you may feel like Madison, you know, is really where your identity is, not so much as an American or a Wisconsin or as a, you know, Ohioan, if that's where you're from. But the, you know, another popular answer was the locality of birth. So if people move, you know, I'm from New York and I still identify sometimes with New York more than Madison, especially when it comes to sports teams. So that also, you know, figures particularly among the Estonians. So, you know, Estonians, 76% of them identified either their present locality or the locality of their birth as their primary identity focus. What about Estonia? Well, interestingly enough, as I said, you know, the ethnic Russians are somewhat more likely to actually say they identify with Estonia more than anything else than the Estonians. And I don't know, you know, that I think is telling interesting. And it all even holds for those who don't have Estonian passports, right? Them even more so than the actual, or sorry, no, less so. So they're the gray ones. That's why I color-coded it. And in terms of the Soviet Union, Europe, Eurasia, not a lot of responsiveness there, although interestingly enough, there is this little group of Estonian citizen Russians who identify with Europe. All right. So as I said, places that people didn't choose as their primary identification, we then asked, well, do you feel a strong affinity with this place, or a weak affinity, or no affinity at all? And so this gives you the proportion by group which said that either felt the strongest or a strong connection with Russia and with Estonia. And, you know, not surprisingly, almost no Estonians felt a strong connection with Russia. What is surprising is that, you know, the only 28% of the Russians said they even feel a strong connection with Russia. Maybe it's not surprising, because these, after all, people who have stayed in Russia. They've had plenty of opportunity to move back to Russia. The Russian government is trying to recruit them back. I mean, they have advertisements, come back to your homeland, come to this office, we'll give you papers, we'll find you an apartment in, you know, Tambov or wherever. Some of the Russian folks we've talked to us is say, oh yeah, we saw that, you know, that doesn't really interest us. It just seemed like a big propaganda trick or something. So I point this out, and again, you know, the Russians do identify with Estonia, even if we say either strongest or a strong connection. So I think this suggests that the Russian ethnic speakers, they do find themselves in a truly ambivalent situation, that although they feel rejected by Estonian society, and although they feel, by and large, that the Estonian government's policies are unfavorable to them, they nonetheless feel like if they have some kind of homeland or country where they belong, it is Estonia. And it's not all that surprising because they lived their whole lives there, and these are families who have opted not to go back to Russia. All right, so that doesn't necessarily make the solution to the problem any easier. In fact, it might make it more difficult. All right, in terms of national identity, so we did ask, do you want to spend the rest of your life in Estonia, or would you like to leave Estonia? And Russians are more likely to indicate they'd like to leave Estonia, so these are the proportion who say they want to stay. You know, 3/4 of Estonian young people want to stay in Estonia. Almost 50% of the citizen Russians want to stay, 37%. So these are the ones who want to leave. Okay, so half of their non-citizens want to leave. And they're the most likely to want to say they clearly want to leave. Where do they want to go? Well, they don't want to go to Russia. So even among those who want to leave Estonia, Russia is not a popular destination. That only 17% of the citizens who want to move say they want to go to Russia, and that's 8% overall, and only 28% of the non-citizens. So although, you know, there's some desire among the Russian speakers to leave Estonia, it's not because they're dying to go to Russia. Instead, you know, they want to go, not surprisingly, to Scandinavia, they often say, or to Western European countries or United States. And we asked them why they don't want to move to Russia, and they gave them a set of reasons. Say, what's the most important reason why you don't want to move to Russia if you don't? And here we didn't find any significant differences by citizenship, and economic and identity issues predominate. So here are the reasons we gave them for not wanting to move to Russia. The economic situation is better in Estonia. Okay, now that's a popular answer, especially among the citizens. Estonia, not Russia, is my homeland. So again, that's the most popular. They really feel that way. So rudeness of the Russian people came up in the focus groups, but it wasn't the top reason cited by very many of our survey respondents. That's why I use these methods hand in hand, right? Somebody says something really interesting in the focus group, but then you find out, well, okay, that was kind of tedious in your head. We are treated like foreigners in Russia. Well, somewhat more say that, but still better protection of civil liberties in Estonia than in Russia. That's not a huge issue for them. Just don't want to live there. Okay, that's fine. All right, citizenship issues. I'll just take 5 more minutes, and then we'll have 15 minutes for questions discussion. So we asked a number of questions. I'm only going to show you a few of them. And the findings are as follows. So I'm going to show you that most Estonians do think that Russians should be allowed to stay in the country, but only if they obtain citizenship. So we give them the answer. So what do you think about the Russians who were born here or who came here during migration? Should they be kicked out of the country? Should they leave the country? Should they be allowed to stay regardless of citizenship? Or should they be allowed to stay, but only if they get citizenship? But the Estonians don't like the idea of making Russian an official language. And there are sharp differences in terms of who is held most responsible for non-Russians not getting citizenship. All right, so I'll show you these data. So I changed colors here. And here there are some small differences, but I figure for simplicity, the shading doesn't come up too well, unfortunately. So here's just the Russians combined, the citizens and non-citizens, for simplicity. So only 5% of the Estonian respondents said that Russians who moved to Estonia during the Soviet time should leave. All right, so it's not that the Estonian population, at least according to the survey, is hankering to kick the Russians out, to get rid of them. Instead, what they say by and large, 60% of them, is that they should stay, but only if they become citizens. So the most common view among the Estonian young people is that we should allow them to stay, but they really should get citizenship, and that means learning Estonian and learning Estonia's civic code and so forth. But even among the Estonians, there's 23% who say, well, they should be allowed to stay even if they don't get citizenship. All right. Among the Russians, 90% say they should stay regardless of citizenship. All right. Only 4% thinks that citizenship should be a condition for staying in the country. So there is division of views there. But it's not the case that the Estonians are anxious for the Russians to leave necessarily. There's more of an interest or a desire that they assimilate and go take whatever steps are necessary to obtain citizenship in order to stay in the country. How do you feel about the idea of making Russian the second official language in Estonia? Right. Well, opinions are pretty sharply divided on this question. That among the Estonian population, 78% strongly oppose that idea, and most of the rest oppose it, while among the Russians, it's almost the opposite. They strongly support it. And this is making the second official language. Okay? So that doesn't seem like a non-starter in terms of policies that might work to bridge the gap between these two populations. There's not a lot of support of it for this among the Estonians. Who is most to blame for the fact that many Russian speakers in Estonia do not have citizenship? All right, is it the Estonian government, the Estonian people, the Russian government, the Russians themselves, or others? Are they? Well, Estonians think it's the Russians themselves, all right? But what do Russians think? They think it's the Estonian government, okay? So again, we have a lot of questions here on political issues. I'll show you a few presently, but the divisions of opinion about these political questions is really quite stark. I showed you some more encouraging signs here, some other variables, but when you get down to the political things, and you'll see some in a minute, there's really a very sharp division of opinion between the ethnic Estonians and the ethnic Russians. All right, one of the big issues, of course, that does divide the two groups is interpretations of history. So as I'm going to show you, Russian speakers are much more likely to have a positive views of Stalin. They're much more likely to say that Estonia joined the USSR voluntarily. They're much less likely to endorse a Russian apology for the Soviet occupation of the Baltics. Right, it's something that the Baltic leaders have asked for, but the Russians have still not done. There are stark differences on many other questions involving contemporary history, so I'll only show you these three. All right, so we have a series of questions we've asked about Stalin in a number of surveys, and Sarah and I continue to be surprised how in Russia, among young people, there's still a very sizable group which has a very positive view of Stalin. It's not quite as pronounced among the Russian Estonians as it is, and here I really should have, it would be interesting to show you the difference. So the Russian Estonians sort of fall in between the Russian Russians and the Estonian Estonians on this question. But okay, so here's one of the questions. Stalin may have made some mistakes, but overall he did more good than bad. 50% of the ethnic Russians agree either somewhat or strongly with that statement. Whereas 74% of the Estonians disagree either strongly or somewhat. All right, that's a very stark difference. So much more favorable views of Stalin in the Russian-speaking population. Estonia joined the USSR voluntarily in 1940. Okay, that's I don't think any serious historical account of that process would contend this. And yet, it is the case that among the Russians, there is, over 50% who agree with that statement. Among the Estonians, vast majority disagree. So again, diametrically opposed view. This, we have all kinds of questions here. Questions about the Katyn massacre. Questions about how many Estonians were deported and killed by Stalin. All these questions about history, you see these diametrically opposed views. All right, Russia should apologize to the Baltic states for the Soviet occupation of the Baltic countries. And we struggled a lot with whether or not we should put occupation in quotations in the survey. And I think we were sneaky. I think what we did, and I got to go back and check this, because we didn't want to prompt the respondent in any way. But I think what we did is in the Estonian language version, we didn't put the quotations. In the Russian language versions, we did. Now, we don't want to... But anyway, I think we put it in quotations in both. Because that would have been. Well, we debated doing that. We decided not to because of things. All right, well, the Estonians strongly agree that an apology is due from Russia, whereas almost none of the Russians agree with that statement. And that is also holds true for Russia proper. So They either think that there's nothing to apologize for or that Russia shouldn't have to apologize. Finally, on the bronze knife, I'm just going to show you two questions, but again, you're going to see stark contrast. So we asked a number of questions. The two I'm going to show you is, first of all, was it the right decision to move the bronze monument to a military cemetery in April 2007? All right, so among the Estonians, 84% either probably or definitely, or sorry, among the Russians, 84% probably or definitely not the right decision. Among the Estonians, 76% say it was the right decision. All right, and then we said, since in the focus groups, we had heard some people say, well, if they want to move it, fine, but they should have gone about it differently. So then we said, well, whether or not you think the decision was right, were the actions of the authorities appropriate? And here, completely appropriate, mainly appropriate, but some mistakes were made, serious mistakes were made, and so forth. Again, this very stark division where the Estonians think the actions were appropriate and the Russians do not think they were appropriate. All right, so, you know, there's a lot of, and I just, you know, I threw up just some discussion questions. I don't know if you want to just jump in and apply, but these are, you know, just some, I think this is a very difficult, intense political situation. I think there are some signs of possible agreement. It is certainly noteworthy that consistently the Russians who do have citizenship are closer to the Estonians in terms of the distribution of their views on these issues, in terms of their socioeconomic status, in terms of a lot of measures, but there's even a gap between there. So, you know, one possible takeaway you could draw from this is it would be in the interest of future reconciliation within the country and the stability for the Estonian government to encourage more Russians to obtain citizenship. Now, I'm not going to take that step for the following reason. That just because those who already have citizenship currently are more similar or more integrated, let's say, into the Estonian mainstream, doesn't mean that there's a causal relationship there. I mean, it could be that precisely those who are more interested in integrating and assimilating are the ones who went out and pursued citizenship. And so, you know, I certainly think it's a long way to get from these data and these findings to a policy recommendation that they should bolster citizenship or lower the citizenship requirements or anything like that. But if anybody has any ideas about sort of potential solutions to this problem, what should be done, or reactions, I'd love to.
I have a question about the educational system and maybe some of the Estonian teachers who can answer it. Are students now all taught in Estonian at school?
No.
They're still Russian schools, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're not required to go to Estonian?
You get to choose which school.
Yeah.
Although there are, so it's...
Are they required to take Estonian at school if they go to a Russian?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there were cases where, so we did hear cases where there were Estonian school principals who lost their jobs because there is a language inspectorate in Estonia whose job is to go around and to make sure that the language laws are being complied with. And so they'll go into stores, and I think, you know, there are certain jobs where you're required to be able to speak Estonian, including being principal of the school, and so they send out testers, and there were... One focus group participant had a friend who lost her job as a principal of a school because she didn't speak Estonian. And I don't know if it was an Estonian school or a Russian school. I guess there are a small number of linguistically integrated schools. But that is an anecdote I did hear. Right?
Well, I have a comment and a question. The comment is, you even now use the word reconciliation. I feel you had a tendency to regard the tension as something that developed since Estonian independence. Mm-hmm. Apart from the quotations from the Bronze Knight, I heard all those other complaints in past years by Russians about living in the Baltic and Soviet times, mm-hmm. because the Estonians were the toughest of the three Baltic nationalities in dealing with the Estonians.
With the Russians?
So, the Estonians were the toughest in dealing with the Russians in Soviet times, and Russians complained about being discriminated against in Estonia in Soviet times. So that this is not new. A question would be, how is this different from what happened before? But my question would be, has European membership in European Union made any difference in the views of Russians of the feeling of satisfaction living in Estonia, making it more, worse, better, or whatever?
I don't think it really registers. So we asked them that in the focus groups, and we said, well, what do you think, are you happy that Estonia is part of the European Union? Is it good for Estonia? Is it good for you? We asked them the question in the survey, and it didn't really come up. It was mostly just indifference, hard to say, no. I mean, it didn't provoke a strong reaction. Like, you might think, and we thought it could go either way. There could be that they feel more protected by the, you know, the various protocols of the European Union, which protect, you know, they have a whole bunch of criteria that you have to meet in order to be a member, and they police that. Or on the other hand, they could have felt that, well, you know, Estonia, by joining the European Union, is a slap in the face of Russia, and they're trying to provoke Russia by being part of NATO. You really don't get a huge, neither one of those responses predominates.
But it also has an impact on possibilities of immigration.
Yeah, yeah, well, they get, I mean, so that's an advantage. Well, but this is a tricky issue, though. So you might think, okay, then that makes that Estonian passport all the more valuable, because then you can go and work in France or Spain or Germany or other EU countries. But, you know, surprisingly enough, that didn't really come up that much as a reason why people wanted to get citizenship. And in fact, the gray passport holders, some of them said, well, I don't want to get an Estonian passport because with my gray passport, I can travel freely. Like, apparently, within the EU, you can go and show this gray passport, which says that you're an alien, just says, this person is an alien resident of Estonia. And apparently they say the border guards, they, you know, they scratch your head and say, what's this? But then they just say, okay, go ahead. And it's easier for them to travel to Russia. It's very hard for Estonians to travel to Russia. They have to get visas like we do. So for those Russians who want to travel, who still have contacts in Russia, you know, it's more convenient for them to have the gray passport, which, you know, surprised me. I would have thought that the possibility to go and emigrate to an EU country would prevail.
So are you saying that once a Russian becomes an Estonian, they lose their dual citizenship?
They don't have dual citizenship. I mean, these people, for the most part, they were citizens of the Soviet Union, living in Estonia, and the Soviet Union collapsed.
Right.
Then they were living in Estonia, but they weren't given Estonian citizenship.
Right.
They weren't given Russian citizenship either.
Okay.
They had, if they want Russian citizenship, they can get it. They can just go, but they have to move to Russia to get that. Although I think now the Russians will even give them a red passport without having them move to Russia. But they still have to apply for it. They're not. They have to, you know, show that they have parents who are from Russia. So they don't have dual citizenship. They have no citizenship, which makes their situation particularly awkward from an international legal perspective. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question about statistical data you showed us about friendship and professional contacts, and it's absolutely agree with you. What about mixed marriages? Do you have such data?
No, I don't.
Also, ethnic ID of kids in this mixed families.
No, I don't have data on either. But I've actually, it reminds me, I sent an email to the SAR poll people asking if they have this data. Because they encouraged me to make a report. I haven't heard back from them. It reminds me I should have to follow up on that.
Yeah, you know, the strongest indicator of conduct.
Yeah, I just I don't know anecdotally or otherwise what those figures are.
One more question. It's easy to say Russians are guilty that they don't speak Estonian. And the question is, does Estonian speak provide any naturalization services? First of all, free language courses. Estonian is not, you know, not one of the languages you can study.
Right.
You know.
Without spending the summer in Madison.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a very good question. And in fact, the Estonian government has provided fairly extensive but varying opportunities. So particularly in the run-up to EU accession, they were very eager to demonstrate that they were going out of their way to try to, you know, incorporate. And they had a very extensive, not just the language learning courses, but also assimilation courses where they taught them tolerance and openness and cultural diversity and all the stuff that we, you know, we were being taught today. And there was actually one member of the focus group said, well, that was really great. I did those programs. But then all of a sudden they stopped. And indeed, once they were a part of the European Union, then funding dried up and then the economic crisis hit. So I think those types of programs have been in abeyance in recent years. And so certainly, you know, one thing that follows from our results is that they, you know, the government, by all means, should, you know, continue to invest to at least make every effort to make it possible. The problem is by this point, you know, you're talking about one third of the Russian speaking population overall who are not citizens, even fewer among the young people. And these are the hardcore who, for whatever reason, still have not learned Estonian. So either they're elderly and it's very hard for them to learn Estonian, and, you know, but that, you know, okay, I mean, if we can speak bluntly, that's not a huge concern because they're older, they're less politically active, you know, they may be bitter, they may be in a sad situation, but if you take care of them socioeconomically, they're probably not going to pose huge political problems. It's the young people who are out, you know, throwing rocks and protesting and causing problems. And if you have 10% of the young people, I mean, they especially who tend to be poorly educated, poorly off socioeconomically, I think that's where the real problem is. Like, how can the Estonian authorities figure out a way to reach these people and you know, just from a purely pragmatic perspective, leaving aside the normative questions, moral questions, how can they deal with the problem that they have a hardcore of alienated young people who happen to correspond to, you know, to a certain ethnic linguistic group, and how can they try to bring them in without compromising you know, the basic norms of the society, which is that this is an Estonian national state, and Estonian is the official language. Not an easy nut to crack. Yeah.
I have two questions. First, so if there are some Russians who go to the university, like 22 or 24% were university educated, are they going to a Russian speaking university? Or are they going to an Estonian speaking university?
There are not Russian speaking universities.
So are they going somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, there are still some classes offered in Russian and Tartu, but I mean, maybe, you know, you all who are shaking your head probably know better than me. So that's the official policy. No classes can be offered, and I thought it was up to the instructor to. Very difficult to,
yeah.
Difficult but not impossible, maybe.
So then that section of the population of the ethnic Russians that was university educated then must be the section that also speaks Estonian.
Speaks Estonian well enough. Yeah, that's a good.
Because it was very close.
Yeah,
like
I should definitely check that. Right. I mean, it's probably not a perfect correspondence because some of them figure out a way to get around it, maybe, or maybe they went to study abroad, who knows, but you're right, it's probably mainly.
Okay, cool, because if they're studying Russian, to come back here, what kind of jobs, university degree jobs would they be seeking with Russian?
Yeah.
But I was also wondering, like, who is teaching in these Russian schools? Are they ethnic Russians living in Estonia with university degrees?
Teaching in the Russian language courses.
And who's going to teach in 20 years? for 40 years?
Good question.
Do they have bilingual education? Do they have any bilingual education or immersion programs where they do both languages?
For young kids or for?
Well, I know like Italian, like you said, mixed marriages, lots of Russians actually choose their child to go to the kindergarten into Estonian kindergarten. So they speak Russian at home, and then the child comes home speaks Estonian Russian, and then later can come to Estonian school, no problem.
Well, like here they're starting a lot of new schools where they have like bilingual schools where they teach immersion both in Spanish and in English, and they have the students who grew up at home speaking Spanish working on English at the school, and English speaking students working on Spanish at school, so that they're interacting and using both languages and supporting the growth of the school.
Actually, there was 90 such a program, but it caused a lot of struggles inside the schools, so they decided to drop it.
So they tried? Did
yeah, but there were a lot of efforts.
Political and other issues.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for my long tiny question. When you asked about the nationality, I was wondering what kind of like images or ideas did you present? Did you like ask about the geographical borders, or did you say USSR? Did you identify with USSR, or did you like show an ethnic costume? Is this you or is this you?
No, we just showed them a list of places and said, you know, what we said. So people have different levels of sense of connection or, with different places. And, you know, so from this list of places, what do you feel the strongest connection to? And, I mean, you're right, it might have been better to show images or to show, but, you know, it's hard with a mass survey to get at that kind of nuance. And, but, I mean, I think, and then again, you deal with lots of regional variations, and it's hard to represent the locality when you're surveying all throughout the country as a separate image.
Well, because when I think you're talking about heritage identity and the Russians, they may connect more strongly with cultural notions that are Russian than Estonian. Mm-hmm. But
not so much the place, but more just sort of
right,
cultural.
They may not identify with Russia, but they may identify very strongly with Russian culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sort of language they come up with.
Okay. So I will continue with the same question about the national identity. So do you have any hypothesis why young Estonian Russians identify more with Estonia than Estonians?
No, I mean, I was actually surprised, and I can't say that I have a. Did you have any hypothesis?
actually, I was thinking randomly right now of two. So one is maybe Estonians tend to connect the idea of Estonia more with politics, so they are drawn off.
Yeah, they're turned off by politics generally, and they just
issues. Mm-hmm. But I think the whole concept or the whole issue is how they define it. What is Estonian? What is locality for them? Because for young Estonian Russians, they might sense that they cannot connect anymore with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So this Estonianness is for them something certain that they can connect with.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still surprised that they are more likely to connect with Estonia than their locality, which for me might make more sense.
Oh, but the Russians are, no, the Russians also are more likely to connect with their locality. What is it? Right, so among the Russians in Estonia, it's still the modal response, so the ones that they have the strongest connection to. But when we ask them, so the difference between this chart and that's Estonia down there, that this is people who have the strongest connection to Estonia. The then we ask him either the strongest or a strong connection. All right, the numbers are somewhat higher. And you know, we're still 60% of the Estonians say they have at least a strong connection, if not necessarily the strongest, with Estonia. But these differences are large enough to be.
No, your focus is the Russian speaking folks in Estonia, but do you know if there's a split within the Estonians, urban, rural, educated?
No, I mean, I will know. So I have all those data, and I'll have to parse it out, and that's one way of addressing, you know, your theory that for the Estonians, they see Estonia as a political concept, and they you know, they're busy being young people, and they don't want to worry about politics. But we do have measures of political engagement and political attitudes, and you know, we can parse this all out by rural and urban, and just haven't gotten to that stage yet in the research.
I think that is not an issue, because I think that Estonian nationality is defined very strictly and very uniformly. So there might be, there are, I know, also inside Estonian population problems identifying with such a concept of Estonianness.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a second issue.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, isn't basic demography going to resolve the problem? Because presumably over the years, the number of people that were born in Russia or sent there by the Soviets will decline, whereas the next generation of those immigrants will be schooled in Estonian. So won't that essentially resolve the problem within a few generations?
Not necessarily. I mean, so the birth rates are actually, I think, a little high. I mean, birth rates among Estonians are extremely low, one of the lowest in the world. Overall, the birth rate in Estonia has been very low. And it's slightly higher, actually, among the Russian speakers. So you know, if you just stand and wait, it's not the case that they necessarily will diminish as a proportion of the population. The assimilation processes that were referred to, whereby the Russian parents often will send their young children to Estonian schools, so they'll learn language. I mean, that might take effect. But, you know, people thought that if you just wait long enough in Russia, that the young people will love America and hate Stalin and hate communism, and that's turned out to be completely wrong. So I don't think we should just kind of sit back and say, well, demography will take its toll and it won't be a problem.
Yeah, but presumably if they're being schooled in Estonian, from the time that they enter the school system, wouldn't that fact make most of them eligible to have the blue passport now?
Yeah. I mean, that certainly should resolve the citizenship issue as such. Mm-hmm. So.
You have no statistics on intermarriage in here.
No, we don't have statistics on the ethnic. Well, we know the marital status, but not the ethnic background.
That's a big factor in assimilation.
Yeah, right. So I got to track down from the polling company that some official statistics at least to get a sense of. Yes, sir.
How do these findings, to your knowledge, compare to other Baltic countries or other Eastern European or the literature in general? How does this, do you have any basis for comparison? How unique is this?
How unique is it? Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, I'd be interested. I don't know much about, I mean, the situation in the other two Baltic countries in Lithuania. I mean, I think there are, you know, there was a lot of interest in Estonia in the early 90s among political scientists. I mean, David Layton, a real big shot political scientist, you know, went and lived in Narva for a year and wrote a book about, he claimed that a whole new ethnic identity was being developed of Russian speakers who are not citizens of Russia. He himself thinks that he was wrong and wasn't good. So I don't know, you know, is it unique to Estonia? I mean, I imagine you would find a similar pattern in Latvia and Lithuania, although I think the situation is different. I think probably there's less tension between Russians and Lithuania. I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I you know, in Lithuania, I think there are smaller proportions of population, and there's not as much of a conflict. Latvia, I think there's actually more Russians, and there have been some quite strong controversies over citizenship questions, but I think the Latvians compromised, and so I don't, you know, you don't hear much about the issue. So that's just my very crude understanding. I don't know, you know, other former Soviet republics Central Asia, you know, there seems to be a Russian exodus from those places. And so, you know, I've got to do more homework. I mean, if you're aware of the comparisons, or if anybody else has any insights into the question, I'd, you know,
we have time for one, maybe two more burning questions.
Only burning.